Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves. It's that time again. It's the Breaking It Down podcast, hosted by yours truly, Mark Mancini, live in Los Angeles. 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss this and you want to catch it later while you're roasting some marshmallows on a campfire somewhere, catch it on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So as I lay the red carpet, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, I got a great guest today, a special guest, Jess Mullion. And I'll tell you, the former owner of the Seattle Mariners, he's done a lot as an entrepreneur with the MS Communications, a USC grad, and the list goes on and on. First of all, Jeff, how are you this morning?
Mark, I'm great. Things are good. Everything is good.
And let me ask you, before I tell you, how can people get a hold of you? I want to wish you a happy birthday yesterday, my friend.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, I'm getting up there, but life is good. I got no complaints, no complaints.
Well, let's get into this because, you know, the first thing I think is entrepreneur, you know, it's whatever you've touched has turned to gold. Let's start with this. Besides your parents, the inspiration, the mentors in your life that you looked at, that you studied, that you said, hey, you know what? I want to be like this. I want to be like this particular person or something. Take us through that.
Well, you know, it's funny. I've had more friends and mentors in the radio business. Probably my closest mentor was a guy named John Dilley. John was head of the National Association of Broadcasters and a legendary broadcast owner and just a dear friend. And we've been, you know, friends forever. When I got into sports, my mentor was really Jerry Reinsdorf. Jerry owns the White Sox and the Bulls, and he was we became very close. He'd be the one person that I usually go to for life advice. Love him dearly, and he has a curmudgeonly exterior, but when you get to know him, he's one of the sweetest people I know.
Well, Mr. Chicago in more ways than one, and when you look to him and you go to him for advice and everything, it's almost like absorbing it like a sponge. It's almost like playing in a sport, and you know you're the rookie or you're the up and coming guy, but you want to study these guys to find out what makes them tick. What stood out with Jerry that captivated you that made you say, "Hey, you know what? This is somebody I want to look up to."
Well, Jerry just understands the issues of sports as well as anybody around, but more than that, he's had so much experience in everything else. So whenever I have an important decision in life, I say I bounce it off of him. He's just an incredibly smart guy, very funny guy. We have a fun relationship. We needle each other all the time. Remember, I'll tell you a story, if you like. When we started All Sports Radio with WFAN, and All Sports Radio really changed the relationship between players and owners and teams because before All Sports Radio, if somebody said something negative about you, it was in a newspaper column. And you read the column at 8 in the morning and you put it down, that was the end for the day. But with All Sports Radio, you could be criticized 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it really changed because so many people got in the habit of turning on their radio and finding out they were being called idiots or, you know, making stupid decisions. And so Jerry was in Seattle one day, and he said, "I'm not a religious guy, but I'm listening in my car to sports talk radio, and they're ripping Jeff Smullion, and they're calling him a moron." And he said, "I have to laugh. The guy who created the format that kind of changed all of our lives for the worse now owns a sports team, and he's on the other side of it." He said, "Proves to me there's a God." So I always thought that was a funny story.
Well, and probably to describe the sports talk with the all the guys going back and forth, I guess three words would sum this up: brash, opinionated, controversial. Any of those three or all of those three would probably typify what sports talk radio is today.
Yeah, it is, and it's fair criticism, but, you know, if you're an owner or you're a player or you're a manager and somebody criticizes your performance, you sit there and go, "Wow, I'm not dying to have this every day."
Right. You know, when I look at that, and you know, sometimes it can get to you, but then what I always said, and I used to do the ring announcing for the Wrestling Federation, the one just below the WWE, I said, if they're not booing you, then they don't know you. So
well,
I looked
right.
at it like this. So, sometimes you got to put the earplugs in the ears, get the ice in the veins, and look at some of these naysayers or people that are just criticizing as pylons in a highway. How did
right.
you look at this when you saw that?
Well, you know, listen, nobody loves an owner in sports. That I can tell you. My favorite line about baseball was somebody said, every man wants to own a Major League Baseball team except the 30 guys who actually do. Owners are unloved, and it goes with the territory. There's some days they write really nice things about you, and there's some days, you know, they call you a bum. I have a favorite saying in life that the line between being a genius and an idiot is very fine. And I've been on both sides. And in the book that you know, that I've written, there's one chapter called Idiot to Genius, which is how we started Sports Talk Radio. And then the next chapter is Genius to Idiot, my tenure owning the Seattle Mariners. So if you live long enough, Mark, you're going to be on both sides of this fence.
Well, not only that, I like what the saying is. Sometimes people, whenever they get into something, they second-guess themselves. It sounded like when you got into sports radio and purchased that, you were all in. You weren't going to second guess yourself. Take us
right.
through that excursion.
Well, I had always wanted to do sports talk radio from when I was a student at USC and not paying attention in a class many, many years ago. And when we bought the Doubleday radio stations, they had two FMs and they had an AM. And the AM carried the Mets. It was a country music station, but it wasn't doing very well. And I said to our guys, why don't we try all sports? And we had a manager's meeting, and my company's very collaborative, and everybody said, that's a really stupid idea. So it got voted down, and one of my friends said, what do you want to do? I said, you really can't lead people where they don't want to follow, so we won't do it. And the next day, a couple of my senior people came in, and they said, look, we still think it's a stupid idea, but we owe you one, so we'll do it. And we put it on the air, and for the first year, it really did not do very well. Jim Lampley called it the Vietnam War of Emmas. But, you know, it took a while. We got a different frequency. We moved to 660 in New York City, put it and put Don Imus on the air and Mike and the Mad Dog, and then it took off. So I went from idiot to genius on the project because, as you know, it became one of the largest radio stations in America. And it now has 700 all-sports stations around the country doing the same thing.
Wow. And I can imagine when you get into something, everybody's going to have their own thing, basically saying, this ain't going to fly. This ain't going to be like that. Kind of reminds me of the podcast when I first started that in 2007. I remember people who were thinking to themselves, four guys in a garage, strings and cans, you know, going back and forth. And then it got to the point where, hey, honey, can you open up your laptop? Let's listen to these guys. You know, now it's Bluetooth. Now, from where you looked at and started with the sports radio, is that what you're looking at now with the podcast and how that's starting and how that's taken off?
Yeah. Well, again, I think, you know, the audio business is fragmented so much. You've got streaming, you've got over the air, you've got podcasting. And it all depends, really, Mark, on can you reach an audience that matters? And if the audience, if your content matters to people, then you can have a viable business. It's as simple as that.
And I guess the two words that come to the forefront on that is plenty of marketing and plenty of promoting.
Right. Absolutely right. Absolutely. You got to let people know you're out there.
Well, when you started with MS, you built that into your own iconic brand. Hot 97 New York City, Power 106 in Los Angeles, KSHE in St. Louis, Q101 in Chicago, WVUE-TV in New Orleans. The list goes on and on. 15 television stations, 6 monthly season magazines, and more than 20 radio stations.
Yeah.
Did you ever sit back after you started that and said, man, this is pretty amazing, but at the same time, harder to climb that mountain, you didn't want to roll off overnight?
No, and you know, I think, you know, one of my mottos is you're gonna and it's why I called the book Ride a Roller Coaster Upside Down, because life's a roller coaster ride, and we've done so many crazy things, and a lot of it was upside down. But you know, you're going to have ups and downs, Mark. And that's you know what I hoped when I wrote the book, hoped to tell people that you know the measure of your life is going to be, you know, when things get bad, how you handle it. And I've never met a human being yet who hasn't had career challenges, company challenges, you know, personal challenges.
Well,
that's
life. Let's get into the book, because I always say in life, and I'm sure you'll agree on this, that it's never the goal, it's the journey, and it's how people handle the journey to get to the goal.
Absolutely right. And that's been the best part, is the journey's been so much fun, and I've surrounded myself with just wonderful people. And it's been fun every step of the way, but it is a journey. And you look at it, I have a friend who said, there in life there are no final victories and there are no final defeats. So you just keep going. Hopefully when you're successful, you shrug your shoulders and have some humility. And when you're unsuccessful, you shrug your shoulders and roll up your sleeves and work harder.
Very good. Take us through the book, and I'll tell you, it's amazing that, you know, you sit there, and the first thing I think of is when you write a book, you need a lot of people to help you write this thing. And then when people get 2, 3, 4, 5 of these things under their belt, I say to myself, wow. I just interviewed Keith Dorney, who used to Penn State grad and Detroit Lions first-round pick. Basically, he's come up with like 7, 8 books, and I'm saying, I don't know what you can put into the first one that you didn't carry over to the second and third. When you looked at the book you came out with, boy, I'll tell you, that had to be something to put your life history in that thing. Take us through that.
Well, I started, you know, the genesis of the book was my daughter, who is now a freshman at Georgetown. But I would take her to school from kindergarten until she fired me when she got her driver's license. and we would talk about life, and I'm one of those guys who, I've got 3 kids, and we just talk about the lessons I've learned and the stories. And my daughter one day said, Dad, nobody would ever believe these stories. These are hilarious. You got to write a book. And COVID came about, and for fun I started writing, and I written like 300 pages and sent it off to a couple friends in the industry, and they said, look, you've got a real book here. So the next thing I knew, we got an agent, we got a publisher, and the project has been a lot of fun. Lots of fun. I think one of the most gratifying things is people who've read the book say, wow, I learned so much, I laughed out loud, and I can't believe all the experiences you've had. So that's been fun, Mark.
And not only that, putting, you know, pen to paper, your thoughts and everything, that's time consuming. That takes time to get it down, and then go back and forth and have somebody help you out, correct it, and go and move. How long did it actually take you to do that? Because I think that's pretty darn remarkable.
Well, the writing of the book, was, you know, I made an outline and wrote the book in about 45 days, about 300 pages. Sent it off to a couple friends, and I have a dear friend who said, look, my husband just went through this. He had the world's best editor. I hired the editor. She was great. And we talked through things, and she'd say, I love this. Add more to it. I don't think this moves the story along. Cut it out. And that took us about 3 or 4 months. And then, you know, we got an agent, and then the agent got a publisher, and the whole process then took about another 9 months to come out. It was fun. Lots of fun.
And not only that, the honors and accolades, 1994, the White House, the head of the U.S. delegation. I mean, it's just the former director of the National Association of Broadcasters, Radio Advertising Bureau. I mean, the list goes on and on. Do you ever sit back and reflect on what you've accomplished? And that can be a beacon of light for any young person to see this.
Well, I'm a big believer that if you care, if you love what you do and you surround yourself with great people, and you have a passion for what you do, you have a great chance to succeed. They keep giving me these awards, and I keep saying, in Indiana, if you're not indicted for anything and you live long enough, you can get awards. But you know, I mean, I'm proud. I'm proud of the things we stand for. I'm proud of the culture we created, and I'm proud of the fun we've had and the people's lives we've touched.
Well, and not only that, when you look at words, I know there's some words I'll run with, and I'm very consistent with these words, accountability, communication, character, integrity. What are the words you run with, and what do they mean to you?
Well, I'll give you another story about my daughter. when I would drive my daughter to school, I'd talk about you got to have grit, you got to have persistence, you can never quit. So she had a paper, and I think it was in the seventh grade, about the most important quality. And she said, Dad, I guess it's got to be grit. And I said, Sammy, it's never grit. The number one thing is integrity. I said, if your word is good, almost nothing else in your life matters. And if your word is not good, almost nothing else matters. So you've got to be somebody that people can look you in the eye, and they know when you tell them something, they can take it to the bank. So I wrote 11 commandments of the company sort of on a napkin when we were starting out. We actually wrote 10, and then we wrote the 11th, which is admit your mistakes after we owned the Mariners. But you know, I just sort of scribbled them out, and I never put them in the order, but in the order of importance, integrity would always be number one.
Well, and not only that, you know, writing things down, I know my wife will sometimes say, hey, you put it on a napkin, but if you're thinking about it and you don't write it down right away, then you're forgetting it, and then you can transfer it somewhere later. But the signs of progress more so than regress, bettering yourself on a daily basis rather than set yourself back.
Right.
We talked about, you know, how long it takes to get up a mountain. You don't want to roll off overnight. What keeps you going to this day and age right now? As you get older, it's more about the experience and knowledge that you can pass on. What do you keep learning on a daily basis that you can keep passing on to people?
Well, you know, we've made the transition. We've pretty much gotten out of the media business. Now we're in the dynamic pricing business and the sound masking business and the content creation business, and we're looking at a couple other businesses. And it's just the steady challenge of making something work. Turning it around. And I think that's the most fun. Doing it with a team of people, looking at a project, putting it together and seeing it to fruition. Yeah.
Now, let me talk about the book. How can people listen in the show today, how can they purchase this great book? And it's probably more an inspiration than anything. It could straighten out their life and, you know, see how, you know, they can be something in one thing and expand that in another profession or something.
Well, I joke, I'm an entrepreneur because no human being would ever hire me in a free society. But what I've learned is it's not a guide for entrepreneurs. It's really, we're all the entrepreneurs of our own lives with our family and the people we work with and our careers and our interests. So, I think the feedback, I think the most gratifying thing about this project is the people who have read it and the response I've gotten. They can get it, I guess the easiest place is Amazon. You just type in Never Ride a Roller Coaster Upside Down or Jeff Smullyan, which is Smullyan, and it'll pop right up and you can buy it. If you want to buy the audiobook, you can instantly download it through Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or, you know, different book sellers. That's how I've learned most people buy books these days. They don't walk into bookstores. But I kid that the audiobook, I did it myself at the behest of my agent and my publisher. They said it'll sound better in your own words. I kid, I think the CIA bought 200 copies to Guantanamo to torture prisoners because making them listen to me for 10 hours would be worse than waterboarding. But I've had friends who've listened to it, and they think it's fun. So, you know, they can get it. Like I said, Amazon's the easiest thing. You just type in my name or Never Ride a Roller Coaster Upside Down, it pops up.
Now, let me ask you, with reviews or somebody, have you received anything that said, you know what, this was so inspiration, it's changed my life? And those are the kind of things you sit back and reflect on saying, you know what, I was instrumental in somebody's life here. Any stories like that?
There have been so many. It seems like every day I get calls or notes or letters from people who said, you know, people I know, people I didn't know, people I knew 40 years ago, and just, you know, how much the book meant to them and how many times they laughed out loud and how valuable the lessons were. So I think that was, you know, hopefully, you know, the book is, you know, you buy the book to learn about some of these industries and to do it in a way where you can learn about the economics of sports or media, but hopefully it's a fun read but hopefully you come away with lessons of things I've learned. And I've learned from good times and I've learned more from bad times.
Yeah, build your own house, go through your own door, but at the same time, what we've gone through, COVID, mental health, suicides, and all this, anybody can really look at something as a feel-good thing and be able to turn themselves around. This book sounds really intriguing in more ways than one, Jeff.
Yeah, it's been a very gratifying experience. The people who have read it, the notes I've had have been as gratifying as anything I've ever done in my life.
Seattle Mariners, 1989, yep. You and some partners purchased it from George there for $75 million, and you held the largest interest and contributed $35 million. Boy, that must have been something. And, you know, I can remember when baseball went to the Pacific Northwest, and Mark Langston and Bruce Bochy and all those guys.
Right.
How fun was it to sit here and reflect on the Seattle Mariners after you purchased it?
Well, it was fun. I was very proud of the job we did. I said in retrospect in the book, we didn't have enough money to incur the losses. When we were in it, we got a collusion payment. The media business got bad. And I joked and said, to own the Mariners when there was no revenue sharing at all era, you really had to be a billionaire. Of course, I said, if you owned the Yankees or the Dodgers in that era, if you had a paper route, you'd be okay. But I loved it. Watching Griffey play every night was just one of the great joys of all time. And I was really proud of the job our people did. We really, you know, we joked, Mark, when we got there, the team had never had a winning season. It was not really loved in the community. And we said, you know, if you bought the Red Sox, you know, your marketing campaign was season starts April 6th, get your tickets. But in Seattle, it was like you had to say, look, we know you think we suck, but we're going to try some fun things, and we got some great young players, and you're going to come out and have fun. And we did all sorts of crazy things in the ballpark, and I was very proud of it. Stuff that we did then, like movie clips, or we had singles nights, we had top 10 lists.
Right.
Things that we did then were revolutionary in baseball. Today, they're commonplace. But I was very proud and we did it out of necessity because, you know, we had to get people to come to the ballpark and say, well, that was pretty much fun.
Yeah, and not only that, it sounded like you borrowed a page from Jerry with the disco night and everything in Chicago.
Yeah, we didn't have anything quite like disco night, but we did all sorts of crazy things. We had a lot of fun.
Well, and not only that, when you looked at taking a team like that and building it, not the Red Sox, not the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Cubs, or stuff like that.
Yeah.
I reflect on my Pittsburgh Pirates, and I think to myself, if you can build something nice, lay a nice foundation, put some structure up, and look these people in the eye and use the word care enough, which is very important, I think you have something in the works, and then eventually you can keep up with the big boys. How did you look at this project in Seattle after you had purchased it?
Well, I think that was the idea. Generate enough revenue to create a team, and we had a great nucleus of a team. After we sold it, they had their one great season where they beat the Yankees and went to the finals of the American League. Obviously, the franchise has never been to the World Series. Every year in Seattle, you hope that they get there. But you know, watching a great young team, when you think that we had Ken Griffey Jr. and we had his dad and we had Edgar Martinez and Randy Johnson and Omar Vizquel, we really built a nucleus I was very proud of.
Well, and not only that, in turn, it came around back to you guys because the fans responded. After the Kingdome and all that, here came Safeco Field. Take us through that because I think that was simply amazing where the fans said, hey, you know what? They've watched our back. They've looked out for us. Let's look out for them and sign off on this.
Yeah, well, in fairness, Safeco was right after us.
Right.
But it was a continuation of the things that we did, and we were very proud of that. That you put a team together that could finally compete. And when they competed, finally, the politicians got together and they said, okay, now we got to get them a stadium.
And then in 2005, you were one of the final eight bidders vying to buy the Nationals.
Yeah, we
came close, but yeah.
Yeah, we put a group together. I was very proud of it. We had people like Eric Holder, and we had Art Monk, and we had Calvin Hill. We had a great group, and we thought we were going to get it. We didn't, so that's life, you know. And if you read the book, you'll talk about the economics of sports of the times we didn't get back in, and maybe we should have. David Stern was very kind to me, and when I got out of Seattle, he said, "Jeff, I want you to take over the Houston Rockets," and
wow.
I said, "David, I appreciate it." When David wanted to do something, you got it done. But I said, I really got to go, you know, take care of my company. So I did. Probably in retrospect, it was a really stupid idea, but you know, it's been fun.
In the last 4 minutes, you know, when you put a group together, I see now with the Washington Redskins / Washington Commanders, they're
right.
trying to buy it from Snyder.
Right.
We saw the Walmarts come into Denver and buy
yep.
it from the Bolins.
Yep.
We've seen the expansion with the Las Vegas Golden Knights in hockey and the Seattle Kraken in Seattle. When you get
yep.
these groups together, how important is it to make sure everybody's on that same page before you put that bid in?
Well, you got to have groups that aren't dysfunctional. You have to have people who work well together, and usually you get to know people, and you know who you can work well with and who you can't. So, you know, I think, and now the difference is the values have skyrocketed so much, Mark, because we've created so many billionaires in the United States that this is becoming like works of art. The Phoenix Suns just sold for $4 billion, and the business was barely profitable. So it's not like a normal business where you buy it and you hope to create enough value to, you know, service the debt and create equity. These are now bought by people who have so much net worth that it's kind of rounding error when they buy them.
Well, and not only that, when you look at baseball, a lot of the other sports, it seems like the players' union is so big, and it's right up there with the Teamsters, and not like so much like the other sports. When you're an owner in baseball, when this thing gets shut down, it sometimes can be a dragged out effect with a strike. Any thought to those things?
Well, again, you're right. The union in baseball was very strong, and I think for the first 100 years of baseball, the players were treated very poorly, and then the union got more of the power. And they may have treated the other side management more poorly. You have to have an equilibrium. But the baseball union has always been by far the strongest in sports. Always.
Well, I'll tell you, as we wrap this thing up, it seems like you've done a lot. You keep getting better with age. It's like a fine wine. Is there anything you want to get off that bucket list that's been scratching at you for quite a while? Because we all have a bucket list, and we all want to get something off of it. I remember, you know, the All-Star game last year in baseball, got that done, thanks to Bill North, a good friend of mine. This year, the WrestleMania, got that off. What would be on your bucket list? And let's see if you've hit everything on that bucket list, my friend.
Yeah, I love to do what I'm doing. I think the most important thing on my bucket list is to stay healthy and keep my family healthy and keep having fun. If I do that, there's not one thing I got to accomplish. I've been fortunate enough to have accomplished a lot. And so I'm a happy guy. I just want to keep being happy.
Well, I'm fortunate enough to do this interview with you. We got to do it again, my brother. Let everybody know how they can get a hold of you and how can they purchase this book.
All right. Well, it's Jeff Smullyan. It's just jeff@emmis.com if people need to reach me. And the book, very simple. Jeff Smullyan, Smullyan. Type it into Amazon. It'll pop right up and they can buy the book. Very simple.
Well, as I get ready to close this show, if any of my Pittsburgh teams have problems and they start to go sideways, I'm going to reach out to you to get a group together to keep them in Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
That's Jeff Smullyan. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, saying thank you very much for listening to the Breaking It Down podcast. Catch it on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. We'll touch bases you down the line. Have a blessed one. Good Friday and a happy Easter. Good night, everybody. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thanks, Mark. That was fun. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye.